Wow, you know, talk about random. Who would have thought Wham would have ever had a Christmas hit, right? I mean, of all people. And yet, the theme of that song actually has something to do with the Christmas story. And so, as Eric said, we're in this series, Keep Calm and Jingle On, taking a look at how we experience the peace and serenity amidst the chaos of Christmas. Really excited you're here this morning. My name's Kurt. I'm the lead pastor here. And, you know, I shared last weekend that, you know, this time of year, I've kind of started reading the Christmas story early every year. I start that every year trying to, you know, kind of get ready for Christmas, because when you come to church at Christmas time, you want to hear the Christmas story. That's kind of what typically happens. You expect that, and that's what we pastors do. You know, Christmas and Easter, we talk about those things, and you kind of know what the teaching is about before you get here. And yet, you know, so I start reading very early and really trying to say, you know, what are some of the fresh insights that maybe hit me about this story this time of year for where we are right now? And as I was reading, you know, I found some things that I think are certainly true of me. Maybe they're true of you. Definitely intersect with the Christmas story, and that is this sense. Isn't it amazing how, you know, regardless of what stage we are in life, and at different stages of life, we have this insatiable desire to make sense of life, right? I mean, we want to know, how do things fit together? We want to know that things aren't random. We want to know that, you know, that there's a plan, that there's meaning, that there's a purpose. And so this morning, over the next few minutes, I want us to think for a moment about this tree actually representing our lives. And as we do that, you know, we want to know how the dots connect. We want to know that there are certain things that are a part of this. And listen, this isn't just a religious thing. This isn't a faith thing. This is a humankind thing. Every single human being, you know, has this insatiable sense of wanting to know how this all fits together. And so, you know, for me, I mean, this kind of represents my life. For my wife and I, we met, we got engaged. Actually, we graduated, then we got engaged, eventually got married, got a job, got a promotion, eventually had a birth of a child. Actually, four children. Our children are represented, Macy, Matt, Maggie, and Meredith. And you know, we see these things, and at different points in life, we're handed experiences or events, and we kind of, you know, want to say, okay, where does this fit into this greater plan, this greater purpose? Now, this is so innate in us that we, as human beings, we actually put terminology to this, right? And this isn't just here in the United States. This is all around the globe. Every culture, every country, we put certain terminology to these things in order that we can really kind of convince ourselves or better understand how this all fits together. Now, with these things, you cannot think too hard about these things, because there are holes in these things that we say, all right? But maybe you've said things like this. Maybe you've said, everything happens for a reason. How many of you have said that at one point or another? Everything happens for a reason. Yeah. What does that mean? All right? I mean, you're like, well, everything happens for a reason. Well, you know, the skeptic in me is like, really? Everything happens for a reason? Because see, we want to believe, we want to have this idea, even if we don't know why or how, that everything in my life, the dots are all connected in a certain way, and I can look back and I can see it. You know, or we say things, I don't believe in coincidence. Maybe you've said that one. You know, what does that mean? I don't believe in coincidence. You know, maybe it means that, you know, we're like, you know, well, I believe there's a God or a force, or maybe it's just karma, but, you know, there's something that it's orchestrating and connecting everything. I just don't believe in coincidence. You just haven't met the right person yet, all right? You just haven't met the right person. What does that mean? It just means you haven't met them yet. You haven't crossed paths. It means that there's a right person out there. You just haven't met them. That's a hard one. I was talking with a friend who's going through a divorce recently, and he's like, these are the things that people throw out to me all the time, you know? And then it ends usually with, I guess it just wasn't meant to be. Well, what does that mean? I mean, have you ever thought about that? I mean, there are holes through this. You can't think about these too far, you know, because, you know, it's not like it's his fault. It's not really her fault. It's like there's a meant to be out there that's trying to connect people together, and they just haven't run into them yet. It just wasn't meant to be. Don't worry, it'll work out. It'll work out in the end. We say that too, right? Don't worry, it will work out. It will work out. See, these are the things we say that help us kind of convince ourselves that there's a plan and that everything's not random. And these are fine for, you know, the things that are kind of fun or random or maybe not too painful, not too difficult, but you know, when the big bumps in the road come, when the big tragedies in life come, then we actually go to a deeper place, and we have this bigger issue with the question, why? Why? Well, what does that mean? Well, why did this happen? Well, what does that mean? Well, why did this happen now? I mean, why, amidst my plan, what I thought was going to happen, why did this happen? Why this illness? Why this, you know, I've never smacked a child, never went to jail, never smoked a pack of cigarettes in my life, and yet cancer arrives, lung cancer. Why now? Why in this season? You know, that's a really, really big question. You know, the question of why did God allow this to happen to me? And so, you know, when we go through some of the bigger bumps in life, the big tragedies, the ones that have a lot of pain associated with them, you know, we kind of have difficulty with this random idea. We try to figure out, you know, where do I hang these things on the tree? I mean, you know, for instance, what are you talking about? We met. I mean, we got engaged. You know, we began to have children. Divorce. Where do I put that on my tree? I mean, I didn't plan on this. I thought everything was fine. This doesn't fit for me. I don't even know where to place this. I don't want this even a part of my tree. Why, God? Why now? Why this? Why is this now a part of my life? You know, or maybe this one. You know, maybe you were the one who was told that you would always have a job. They promised you. In fact, you were the one that hired others. You were the one that just got, you know, the cool big promotion, and then all of a sudden you're one of the tens of thousands of people that don't have a job any longer. And you're saying, why? God, I just, you know, why in the world? I just got engaged, just got married, just had the birth of a child, just bought a house. You know, why now? God, how could you allow this to happen? We don't know where to put this. We don't know how this fits in to this bigger picture. You know, there's things like illness, you know, and a variety of other things that when these bigger issues of life come, we have some big questions. We begin to ask questions like why, and we don't know where to put them, and so we just kind of ignore them or kind of disconnect them. And you know, again, this is not religious. This is not a faith-based thing. This is a humankind thing. We all have this insatiable desire to try to figure out these kinds of things. And when something tragic happens, you know, we stand there and we're like, I don't know what to do with this. When something happens at the office or in the neighborhood, what we begin doing is we begin kind of kicking around the purpose pile. We're like, how does that connect? How does it fit in? You know, is this random? What do I do with this? And why do we do this? We do this because we want to make meaning out of it. We believe that there's got to be a purpose. There's got to be a plan. Now, here's another interesting question. Why do you do that? I mean, why do you ask that question? What's wrong with you that causes you to want to know that there must be a plan? You know, we have at home this Yorkshire Terrier poodle mix, which is apparently really supposed to be intelligent. Verdict's out. And, you know, and here's what his life looks like. He gets up in the morning, goes outside and pees, comes inside, eats, plays with the kids till they go to school, and then sleeps the rest of the day. And I really don't think he wakes up in the middle of the day and says, man, I wonder how my nap right now is connected to the one I took yesterday. And I'm not sure. I really wonder how that one connects to tomorrow's. And why do I sleep all day? I don't think he asks those questions. As intelligent as he is, I really don't. But for you and me, we want to make sense of these things. We want to know how the different events of our life connect and how the dots connect. And as Christians, for those who are Christ followers, for those who are people of faith, we kind of have an answer for this. We say, well, that's because we all have the image of God within us. We are all holders of the image of God. We're divine image bearers. And we believe God is a God of sequence. God is a God of history. God is a God that takes things that are formless and void and puts structure and form to them. God takes things that are in a certain place and takes them to new places. And so, you know, we seek to try to understand that if something isn't making sense or it doesn't fit in, we begin to realize that this must somehow have a connection, or at least if it doesn't have a connection, God can use it once it occurs. And this is just a reflection of God being in us. It's this idea that God, we actually are divine image bearers. And for some of us, we have a hard time with that. We have a hard time, you know, thinking about that. We have a hard time, you know, we've never really understood our life as being connected to anything bigger. You know, we've never been connected to something bigger, to someone bigger, other than ourselves. You know, we have our job, our success, our family, our friends, and those have all been pretty good, and we've been pretty satisfied. And then one day, it's like we've got a pebble in our shoe. It's like there's that nagging little sense of, oh, there's just something that doesn't quite feel right. And we begin to realize that there's a cloud over some of my relationships, and maybe a cloud over my work, a cloud over my success, a cloud over my fun. And all of a sudden, what used to, you know, feel good just doesn't bring that anymore. And we begin saying, well, why? What's the purpose of this? And we begin to realize that we long to be connected to something bigger. We long for our relationships to have meaning and purpose beyond just the here and the now. We long for our work, our success, to have a purpose and a plan. And these are all things that help us see that we are actually divine image bearers. We don't understand how it all fits together. Sometimes we can see it, sometimes we can't. But there is a thing within us that longs to connect the dots, to know that something bigger is orchestrating here. Now, this idea collides directly with the Christmas story. And when we look at the Christmas story, as we're going to do here in a moment, you know, the Christmas story is this kind of preeminent example of God and how he lowers himself down into the earth, how he lowers himself down among humankind. I mean, he'd been kind of distant. People of that time hadn't heard from God in over 400 years, 500 years. And all of a sudden, he lowers himself down in a seemingly random place, a seemingly disconnected community, just a blip on the map in a tiny little dot in the course of history. And yet in that moment, God lowers himself down. He begins intermingling with humankind and communicates to the people, even though they think these are just seemingly random and disconnected experiences and events. And so what I want us to do is I want us to take a look at the Christmas story here this morning. Again, a different part of the story. Last week we looked at Matthew chapter 1 and 2. This week I want to look at Luke chapter 1. And I want us to look at this and then see how this connects to our lives. And Luke chapter 1 is where we find the beginning of this portion of the story. And let me tell you something about Luke. You know, in case that you're new to the Bible, Luke, you know, maybe at some point you went to college and you had an English professor that just, you know, kind of kicked the legs out from underneath the Bible. They told you the Bible's just a myth. It's just a piece of literature. It's fiction. It's great writing, but some human being wrote that. Duh, like humans don't write every, you know, piece of literature. But you know, you got past that. But you, that got you stuck. And you're just like, man, I still remember that. And I still kind of believe it's just a myth. It doesn't really make sense. Well, listen, your English professor's probably sitting somewhere around the globe in a church this morning feeling really bad that they misled you. All right, I mean, maybe they were stuck at that point in their lives and that's where they were. And they told you that, but something happened and they've actually moved on. And yet you're still stuck. And so if that's where you find yourself, real quickly, here, you know, the Bible is not a book. It's not a collection of books. It's actually a collection of ancient manuscripts. It was bound together. It was put in book form so it could be portable, so it could be carried around from place to place. Now, these ancient manuscripts were written in the first century by a guy by the name of Luke in this case. And Luke did a biographical account of the life of Jesus. And really what he did is he said, hey, I want to give an orderly account to what took place in Jesus' life, because I want the generations that come behind us to understand what took place when he was here. And so we're going to read this authorized biographical account of Jesus' life according to Luke, and then we're going to skip down. So we're going to start at the beginning, then we're going to skip down to the real part of the Christmas story. And as you listen to this, if you're not a Bible person, if maybe you've not interacted with the Bible since childhood, I want you to listen to this ancient first century story, this document, this biographical account, and see if it sounds like a fairy tale to you. All right, sometimes we're like, oh, it's just like, you know, a long time ago in a field far away, or a long time ago in a galaxy far away. We think this is just a random story. No. Listen to this. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us. So Luke says many. So it's not just Luke, but many people are actually doing this. And so if Luke were here, we'd say, Luke, really many people sat down to try to give us an orderly account of what took place here among you? Yes. So that means, Luke, that you were actually there. You actually have talked to people that were at this very event, this very experience. Yes, this happened in my lifetime. Oh, okay. Okay, let's read on. Just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. So what you're saying right here, Luke, is this stuff you're about to write down, you actually got this from people who saw it take place. Yep, that's what I'm saying. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty, remember that word certainty, of the things that you have been taught. Now, this doesn't sound like once upon a time, does it? This doesn't sound like in a land far away, in a galaxy far away. It doesn't sound like these things. It doesn't even sound religious, right? I mean, this is Luke who says, hey, I've investigated it. I've done due diligence on it. I've actually got eyewitness accounts of what took place, and I want to make sure future generations have an account of what took place among us. Wow. You didn't know that was in your Bible, did you? But you ought to read your Bible more often. You really should. Now, and we've got them for free if you would like one. You can stop by Connection Point. Now, here's the real part of the Christmas story. So Luke said, hey, I investigated this. I've got eyewitness accounts. Here's the story of Christ. In the sixth month, notice the detail right here. Fairy tales don't have this kind of, a long time ago, in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, Elizabeth was a relative of Mary's. God sent an angel Gabriel to Nazareth, the town of Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. Now this next phrase right here, I mean, I don't know how to capture the weight of this next thing that Luke writes right here. I mean, imagine the drama right here. Imagine the dramatic soundtrack that must have entered as this was being recorded, as this was actually taking place. Everything hangs on this next phrase right here. it says the virgin's name was Mary. Now, I don't know that Luke understood the magnitude of what was taking place as he was writing this down. I don't know that he understood that buildings would be named, cathedrals would be built, all in the name of Mary, that there would be wars that would be waged over the fact that there was a virgin whose name was Mary, that there would be missionaries that would be sent, that there would be heretics burned at the stake, that there would be people who would give their life so that people in the far reaches of the world could actually hear that there was a virgin who gave birth to a son and her name was Mary, that people would actually give their lives to the transposing of this story into a language that everyone could have. I just don't think Luke understood the magnitude of that statement right there. I think Luke's kind of going, hey, I don't know about that. I'm just giving a first century account so that people behind us kind of know what took place among us. And so the virgin's name was Mary. Now, we don't know that much about Mary, all right? We don't know that much. We know her name was Mary. There's a few things because of the context of that day we know about Mary. We know that she was a teenager. We know that that's true. We know that Mary was pledged to be married. We know that she must have met her husband. She got engaged. Now, it's quite likely that she met and got engaged on the same day. Right? This is the way things typically work. This is most likely an arranged marriage. We know that there's a process to the engagement that actually ended with the couple coming together and consummating the relationship. We know that out of that would often come a birth of a child. And that was one of the goals of her parents, was to produce grandchildren for them if they lived long enough. We know that's true. We know that her husband Joseph was a carpenter and that he owned his own business. And then after that, we don't know very much. We know that they were landing in this tiny little blip on the map in a place that seemed very random, that was literally just a dust in the desert of that time, and in a speck of time in the great scheme of everything that God was doing throughout the world. Very random, very disconnected, just a couple random circumstances taking place. And yet God, in this moment, decided to touch down. He decided to lower himself down into that moment, into that randomness, into the chaos of that day, into this very disconnected little community, this dusty little town. And he decided to show up and intervene in the lives of these two people, Mary and Joseph. Verse 28, the angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored." We're going to come back to that phrase. That's a big phrase. "The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. In other words, she's like, "Are you the good witch or are you the bad witch?" I mean, that's, you know, she's kind of like, "I'm overwhelmed by this. I've never experienced an angel. I live in a dusty little town where nothing big ever happens. I mean, the Lord is with me? What are you talking about? This is very overwhelming." She goes on, "But the angel said to her, 'Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive.'" Notice the certainty right here. Amidst all of this randomness, all of this uncertainty, notice the certainty that's communicated in this phrase. "You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom will never end." I'm telling you, if Mary had any presence of mind right here, she would have picked up on this. She's like, "What are you talking about? My son's going to have a kingdom? Are you talking about, you know, I'm in Israel. Israel has not had an independent kingdom for over 500 years, and you're saying this son that's going to be born to me is going to have his own kingdom? Who in the world's going to believe that? Who in the world will believe that?" And yet I think she wasn't so worried about the kingdom that was coming as opposed to something else she was about to ask. Verse 34, "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." And then according to Luke, who's writing in a language right here that wasn't spoken by Mary or the angel, Luke chooses some really difficult words right here. And these words are difficult. These words are words that pastors and theologians will just kind of gloss over because they cause us to cringe a little bit. They're a little bit uncomfortable. We don't like to pause on this part of the story very often because it gets a little weird. But Mary asked the question I think any teenage girl would ask if she was told, "You're going to have a baby and remain a virgin." And so very delicately, I suppose, this is how the angel answered her. The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come onto you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God." Now, just out of curiosity, let's do a little poll here real quick. How many of you, before you came in here this morning, before I actually read that passage right there, have ever heard Jesus as being referred to as the Son of God? Just out of curiosity, let me see your hands. Wow. That's really cool. This is exactly what they said was going to happen. I mean, for Mary, do you understand? She's like, "My son's going to have a reputation of being the Holy Son of God." That's blasphemous. And yet, you're not surprised by it at all, are you? It's interesting. Verse 36, even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age. There's that certainty again. And she, who was said to be unable to conceive, is in her sixth month, for no word from God will ever fail. Now, last week, we looked at Joseph and how Joseph's life got really, really complicated, the relational complications he experienced. And Mary's life goes in the same direction right here. I mean, Mary is a pregnant teenager with no explanation as to why. Now, for those of you who have Catholic background, all right, no disrespect intended right here, all right? Just want us to use our imaginations here for a moment. But I want you to think about this. I mean, I guarantee you she was like, Angel, I need you to come down here and give a little explanation to my mama and my math teacher. They're looking at me kind of strange. They're not really understanding. I need an explanation right here. And for Joseph, understand, for Joseph, he kind of got a heads up on this, right? He had a visit from an angel as well. And so I think that this is all unexpected, and talk about bad timing. All right, so Mary and Joseph just met, just got engaged. They're expecting their first child, and the angel comes and appears to them, tells them how this is going forth. And then Caesar Augustus issues a decree, and that means that everyone has to go back to their native area to register for a census. And so I think Joseph goes to Mary and says, honey, I've got some bad news, and then I've got some really bad news. The bad news is that Caesar issued this decree, and we need to go home to my native area. The really bad news is the only way to really get there is by a donkey ride. Now, remember Miss Holy, favored by God, right? Hey, you're favored by God. This is the son who's coming, whose kingdom is never going to end. Well, little Miss Highly Favored by God gets to take a 120-mile donkey ride 6 months pregnant. All right? And so this is, you know, where does this fit? This is one of the circumstances that they run into. She doesn't know how this is playing into this. And you probably know the story really well. So you know that the ride takes a lot longer than they expected it was going to take. And by the time they get there, there's what? There's no room left in the inn. And I think the angel's like, Mary's like, Angel, I think I went out of this story right now. This was not a part of the plan. You didn't tell me that when I got there, we wouldn't have a place to stay. Remember, angel, I'm like highly favored. I'm like carrying the son, the savior of the world. And what do you mean, angel, that you didn't get a room? I mean, I think this is what's taking place right here, right? And you're looking at this and you're like, how does this fit? Where's this thing going, right? And so the story continues to deteriorate, right? It continues to deteriorate. And at any point in the story, you could say, God, why? Why? And why the census? And why no room in the inn? And why the donkey ride? And then it just continues to go downhill. As if it wasn't bad enough, there's a king in the area by the name of Herod. And Herod gets word that there is a new king that was born. And Herod's jealous over this. Herod wants to be the only king. He wants his name to live forever. And this is the part where we come to the really tragic part of the Christmas story. In fact, this is the part where, we don't like to pause on this part very often because, you know, this is the part that begins to overpower the romantic side of the Christmas story. Because early one morning, as moms and dads were getting their babies up for the day, Herod sent his army into the little town where they believe Mary and Joseph were at, and they slaughtered literally every child under the age of two. Now, yeah, their assignment was to slaughter just the little boys in hopes of killing this new king. But listen, Herod's army, they were thorough. And so they would rather go back to Herod and say, hey, we got every single little boy and a number of girls too, versus saying, yeah, we think we got everyone, but we may have missed one. That would not have been good. So imagine, moms and dads waking up, getting their kids out of bed, and their children are ripped from their arms and slaughtered, literally slaughtered, right in front of their eyes, out of a random, purposeless, senseless act of murder, all for the sake of jealousy. I mean, where does that fit? That makes you stand back and say, God, what? Why? What's going on right here? And yet, it's part of the story. And Mary and Joseph fled. They actually went to Egypt from that point. They fled about 200 miles to Egypt. And again, at any point of the story, you can say, why? Where does this fit? How is this all connected? How are these random things and these senseless acts of violence? And I mean, how is that a part of the story? And for the rest of her life, you'd have to think Mary lived knowing that while her child was spared, why weren't all the other little children spared? I mean, she had to live with that. I mean, God, what's the purpose of that? How could you do that? God, if you had the presence of mind to warn me, why couldn't you have warned all the other little children? And then years went by. And Mary would then experience one of the most imaginable things that I think a parent could ever experience. As she watched her son beat within an inch of his life. I mean, she saw the gore, she smelled the gore, she was close enough to see it and smell it. She saw him put a crown of thorns on his head and watched him carry his cross for a crucifixion out into the city streets, down to the place where he was going to be executed. And she stood there and she watched his execution, crucifixion style. And listen, the Romans, man, they'd perfected crucifixion. I mean, the goal of crucifixion was to allow the criminal to live as long as possible after they'd been nailed to the tree so that the community could see the example of what happens when somebody goes against the Roman government. And so she sat there and she watched her son be crucified. And yeah, we romanticize it. We say, oh man, it all worked for good, right? It was good. We understand it. But listen, Miss highly favored by God. Miss, you know, the Lord is with you. Miss, his kingdom is never going to end, watches her son die. And in those moments, you have to say, is that just a random act of violence? I mean, is that, you know, with no good end in sight? I mean, you know, and all of a sudden we begin to see this is the epicenter of God's activity right here. When it looked like God had lost control, all of a sudden this is the crosshairs where God begins to emerge and emerges down on the scene. He lowers himself down onto the scene to actually pay for the sins of all mankind. And that thing in you that wants to know a sense of purpose, that thing in you that wants to know, you know, if everything works for good, you know, that's the thumbprint of God in your life. That's that innate desire that we have to want to make sense of life when things don't seem to connect. And when things seem purposeless, or when, you know, that job loss just seems insurmountable, or when my marriage tension just seems like there's no way this can be redeemed. When these things that are randomly happening, these circumstances, you know, and I'm sitting there saying, how does this fit into the overarching plan at Christmas? We're reminded that this is a story of God with us. That God takes all of these random things and he actually brings them together. And we don't understand them all. We don't know how they fit into the plan. But then at the end of the story, the angel Gabriel comes and visits Mary and says these last things to her. And he tells her these things before she really knows what's going to happen. I mean, listen, she doesn't know the details. She doesn't know how this story is going to play out. She doesn't know about the donkey. She doesn't know about the inn. She doesn't know there's no room for her. She doesn't know, you know, about the slaughter. She doesn't know about the crucifixion. She doesn't know she's going to watch her. She doesn't know that, you know, one time a week, 2,000 years later, people are going to be gathering in her son's name all across the globe. She doesn't know that a third of the population of the world is going to know who the Son of God is and that was her son's reputation. She doesn't know any of that. And yet my hope at the end of this conversation is that you and I can say, you know, I think I want to be able to say what Mary says. I want to be able to say what she says amidst these difficult circumstances. Here's what she says. She says, I am the Lord's servant. May it be to me according to your word. You know what my big takeaway is from this phrase right here? I don't know what faith looks like for you. I don't know how faith has been defined for you historically. Oftentimes faith has been defined as, you know, a perfect faith is a faith that moves God. When God is stable, it's a faith that moves God. But I don't really think that's it. I think a perfect faith is a faith that moves us to trust God when it doesn't seem that he's going to be moving. I think a perfect faith says, yeah, we just met and we got engaged and, you know, got that promotion and then graduated and then got married and then divorce hit. And why did divorce hit? It seems like you're not moving right now. Or then the job loss came or an illness came or a difficult relationship with a child came. I'm like, God, you don't seem to be moving right now. Perfect faith doesn't say, God, I need you to get back on plan A with me. Perfect faith, I believe, is a faith that moves us to trust God when it doesn't seem that God is going to be moving. And here's the good news. That thing in you that says, hey, I gotta understand it. I want to know how it all fits together. That's a good thing. That thing in you that says, hey, I want to know that there's more to life. That's a good thing. That thing in you that says, I want to know that it's not just random. That's a good thing. That's the thumbprint of God in your life. That's evident that God, a reminder that God is among you and even within you, causing you to ask those questions. And so in light of this story, here's what I want us to kind of close this morning as we kind of consider these things. Consider this difficult, really difficult part of the story, which comes probably for many of us as we consider what some of the unexpected things are in our lives. Yeah, I'd say that probably over the last 2 or 3 weeks, there's probably a number of us who have had something unexpected come into our life, some event, some experience that we just didn't see coming. Maybe it was a job loss. Maybe it was, you know, some marital tension. Maybe it was, you know, an illness that was unexpected in somebody that we love. And for some of you, you're staring at that and you're saying, Kurt, I just don't understand how this fits into the plan. I don't understand, you know, I don't know that I can have a faith amidst my financial crisis. I don't know that I really understand, you know, how to get through the tension that I'm experiencing. I mean, we just had a baby and now we're having tension in our marriage. And I just don't understand it. But what I want to be able to do is I want to be able to have the faith like Mary that says, and notice this is very technical what she says. She's very technical. She says, I'm your servant. Let it be to me according to your word. Very, very specific in how she said that. She's saying, God, I want you to redeem this. I don't know if you created it. I don't understand all that. But what I do know is I'm experiencing, I want you to take where I'm at. I want you to redeem it and bring something good out of it. And so as we wrap out, I want you to take out your connection card. On the back, there's a section called Next Steps. And today, there's a phrase here that says this. It says, God, I want you to redeem. And really what I want us to do is over these next few moments as PJ plays this song, I want you to listen to these words and I want you to think about these this statement here. God, I want you to redeem. Is there something unexpected that's taken place in the last few weeks? Something unexpected you're dealing with? You thought, man, I never thought I'd be dealing with this. There's a whole list of things there that it could be. There's a place where you could write something in. But God, is there something that I just want to say, I want to trust. I want to have the kind of faith and hope to trust that even though you don't seem to be moving, I'm going to trust that you can redeem and bring something good out of this. So take a moment and process, reflect, spend some time in praying as you listen to these words.